the winning sound of Network Sports.
Yes, good evening to all of our listeners. And I'd like to welcome you to another edition of Mason and Guests on Voice of Barbados, 92.9 FM. I'm Dr. Andrew Ford, sitting in for Andrew Mason tonight. As usual, you can call 434-1790. And, you know, we're going to have a really good show tonight. And, of course, we couldn't have a show without our sponsor, ESA Field White Rum, the best shot of the day. ESA Field White Rum. If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it up, or you can't qualify to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ESA is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 pa 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 da da. Say what you want. ESA is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day. Well. Such a good sponsor. Of course, lots happened during the week in cricket. Internationally, we had Australia beaten by India in Australia at Perth by 295 runs. That was kind of shocking. Our own Jacob Bethel, who we still own, even though he plays for England, will be debuting at number 3 in the Test match against New Zealand. No champion for the CG United 50 overs. That's unfortunate. And of course, coming home in Antigua, West Indies completing a comprehensive victory today by 201 runs in Antigua. So we have a lot of things to celebrate where that's concerned. But I'd like to welcome, you know, all of my guests, you know, Basil Butcher and of course Philo Wallace, George Ferris, and we have Miles Bascom here as well. Gentlemen, thanks for being a part of our show. As usual, I'd like to start internationally first, though, because I think that, you know, that performance in Australia by India was you know, unexpected. Most of the experts expected that Australia would kind of win the series, and you know, when the match started, it looked as though things were going to plan when India only made 150, but then when Australia were only able to reply with 104 and with a catastrophic failure of their batting, then it seemed like just a second innings match until the youngster Jaisuraal and, you know, the rest of the batting clicked, and we had a century by Virat Kohli, and you know, an imposing total for Australia to chase, and they just didn't deal with it very well. And the, you know, test match with two fast bowlers as captain and Bumrah did a really good job and tore through the Australians, as we all know. And in the end, it was a really big victory for Australia. So to start off where that's concerned, I'd like to welcome Philo Wallace initially. And Philo, what did you think of that match? I think you're muted as usual. The strong silent
Andrew type. Has left you the hot seat.
Yes, it feels pretty cool.
Good night to the guests, obviously. A special welcome to Miles Bascom, obviously the director of cricket for the West Indies. Might say hello also to my friend Carlos, who is here in England, recovering from a stroke, and heaven. I think that India surprised Australia, because normally the first test match don't play at Perth. So to put the first test match at Perth was a strategic plan for Australia to really run in and bowl fast at the Indians. The top of the Indians in the first innings for under was a decibel over 150. But there's a man called Jasper Bumrah, who Australia obviously did not remember, but still a potent force and bowled with a lot of discipline. He was captain, and he bowled with a lot of discipline, a lot of courage, and he set the tone for the test series, actually. And that test match was the rude awakening, because then we saw the best of the Indians on a surface that flattened out. And the Indians just put the Australian bowlers to the sword. When I listened to Josh Hazel, what he said, that they tried everything. When you have that quality attacker, you tried everything, and you had no answers. That means you're up against it going into the next four test matches. So I thought that the Indians played well. Again, we've seen home teams looking to use home advantage, and then it becomes a disadvantage. But it just goes to show that the depth and the commitment of what that Border Gavaskar series means to the Indians. actually the Border Gavaskar series that was bigger than the Ashes between Australia and England, which will happen sometime next year. But the Indians really played well, and I want to commend them. And it's good to see the Australians on the back foot for once. I watched that test match, and I saw the Australians shaking their heads. They just did not know what to do. No bowling plans work. You can give a man like Manix Lambertie a ball and tell him to bowl only short balls. You know that you're staying down the barrel. And Steve Smith and Lambertie as well, struggling. Khawaja. So they're in a pickle, Australia, because of the Indians and how they've handled themselves so wonderfully well at Perth, and also set up now for the next test match, which is going to be played with a pink ball, a day-night test match. So it sets up that series quite nicely. And Ravi Chatri said, it all depends on the first two test matches that will tell where the series is going to go. But when you look at that first test match, that resounding victory from India, Australia really have a big mountain to climb.
Yeah, definitely. They're under the caution, under pressure. George, you're a former fast bowler, so I'm sure you would have enjoyed seeing the exploits of Bumrah and also the Australians, especially in the first innings, even though not so much in the second, at Perth, a bouncy wicket, even though the wicket became uneven and some cracks and you know, we had some low balls after. What do you think about the quality of the fast bowling on display in this series so far? George.
Hey, good evening, Doc. Good evening to the rest of the good evening, Doc. Good evening to the rest of the panel. Good evening to your many listeners. I want to say a special hello to my buddy Fitzroy Simon in Leicester, England, one of your longtime listeners. Well, let me preface this by saying I've never experienced any quick pitches when I was playing. All the time, all the pitches that I played on, they were flat. So let's put that first.
Disclaimer.
But the other, what I'm saying with the bowling that the Indians put on, it was very, very superb. These guys were consistent with their line and length. They didn't let up. They were disciplined. Bumrah was exceptional. However, he got great support from the other three fast bowlers. The Australians didn't have an answer. Neither with their bowling. The Indians batted fantastic. The young Jayas, what's his name? Jaiswal?
Yeah.
Man, he looked brilliant. He reminded me of Shivnarine Chanderpaul, but just with a bit more aggression. I thought if Bumrah had put Australia in first, we would have seen the match done in about 2.5 days. So you really give the Australians authority a bit more gate receipts, because if India had bowled first, I don't think Australia would have made 100. So it was a good match to see. I know the Australians are not going to lie down. They're going to come back tough. They always come back. They're very tough at home. And I'm looking forward to a very exciting, competitive series.
Yeah. Basil, you know, we had contrasting batting abilities on display. You saw, you know, George mentioned the youngster Jaiswal. He is, you know, very strong on the onside, but yet equally efficient on the offside, cutting and going through cover. It was a joy to watch him. He was, you know, he took his time. He used up a lot of balls, but then when he was ready, he really, you know, changed into the gears. And then you watch the Australians bat and the double failure of the top order. You know, we have Marinus and you have Smith, Khawaja, who's someone I'm really, you know, very, I really sweet on Khawaja, and the debutant, you know, lots of issues there, an aging team. What do you think about the batting that the Australians showed during the test?
I think something we have to remember, go back a little bit. Let's go back to the West Indies beating Australia. We had a fast bowler who was bowling unbelievably and bowling quick, and bowled West Indies to victory. And then we saw Australia at times, even in the Ashes against England, when they faced up against Mark Wood. And Mark Wood went at them. They struggled a bit. And then recently against Pakistan in the one-day series, although it's different players. But we're seeing an Australia team that is vulnerable to serious fast bowling. And also, they have yet to solve the opening quandary they're in since the retirement of Dave Warner. Mark Sweeney had an unforgettable debut. So we're going to see how he proceeds in the next test. It's the first time up. And we must again echo the thoughts of my previous panelists, Philo and George, that Bumrah was, I mean, the other bowlers bowled really well in supporting him. But Bumrah was the guy that was the X factor that the Australians had no answer for. And they're going to have to come up with some answers to deal with Bumrah, because otherwise this series is going to be over before it gets started, almost.
Yeah. Well, you know, Miles, I think you would believe that I will only engage you in things related to Cricket West Indies, but I know you're a cricket fan, and I'll give you a chance to ventilate on the match if you did see any of it.
Thank you, Dr. Ford, and good evening to the other members of the panel and to all of the listening public. So, unlike Andrew, you give me a chance to warm up before.
Yes, definitely.
The basketball in starts. I appreciate that. I think it was a really good showing by India. As Philo mentioned, that first test at Perth was intended to be a bit of a statement piece, I expected, by Australia. An emphatic start to the series, intended, I'm sure, to knock India back on their heels, you know, and have Australia going into the remainder of the series in a prime position. And India has pretty much just turned that series on its head. And now Australia are the ones who have to find a way back. So that is certainly the beginning or the makings of what should be a very interesting five-match series. So I'm definitely looking forward to that.
Okay. Philo, getting back to the match, you know, Virat Kohli has been having a difficult time, not really doing well previously in the last few months. And, you know, you saw him building an innings, and then when they needed to accelerate to get the early declaration to put the Aussies under pressure on the penultimate day, he along with Reddy just accelerated and you know, went up more than a run a ball, and you know, gave themselves a score that they knew that Australia couldn't get. What do you say about the versatility and the resilience of a man like Kohli, and the way the Indians really, you know, went through the gears and played efficiently and appropriately at times to bring home the bacon?
But Dr. Ford, I think that Jasper Bumrah summed it up quite well. He said that India cricket doesn't need Kohli. Kohli doesn't need India cricket. India cricket needs Kohli. When you look at it, Doc, he's determined. You know that he knows deep down inside that he has not been producing the runs that are expected of him. When you look at it, he knows that his age is getting on him as well, and you expect people of that ilk to slow down. But what he did in Australia, he showed class. He showed that he can weather the stuff. He can apply pressure. And when pressure is applied to him, he can transfer pressure. And he managed it well. He also held the middle order and lower middle order together quite nicely. And he knew when to accelerate. He also, his game awareness was on point. And that is one of the beauties about him. And you will see him now that he's feeling that mid off and not even in slip. So he's more conscious of his position in that side. And you want to make a statement. You had a bad series at home. You come to Australia, you know you have you're the holders of that Gavaskar Border Trophy. You don't want to release it. And he will want to be the one this might be his last tour to Australia anyway. And he will want to leave Australian shores with this reputation intact. He's got, what, 7 test centuries against them and 4 more test matches. You never know, he could end up with 10 test centuries against Australia because he's that type of player. And he loves chasing records. And he saw what Joe Root would have done in the summer, and he would want to emulate as well. So it is a good challenge for Kohli. And obviously he's ticked the first box, getting 100 not out, and then he's on to the second box with the pink ball. So he's done really well, and he has the respect of the team and the management team as well, team members and the management team in that India squad. And he can only get better. I can't see Kohli dropping his guard here. He's going to keep his guard up, and he's going to continue to look for big scores. You can hope and wish him for all the very best, because beating Australia is going to be massive. It's going to set world cricket alight if the Indians can continue to beat Australia. And it gives the rest of Test playing nations hope that once they go to Australia and they play decent cricket, that they can beat them. So I think it sets it up quite well, and I wish Kohli and all the other batters all the very best.
George, before we leave this series, looking at the two teams, I mean, Australia decided to go in with their usual attack, having Lyon as the spinner, and India really went mostly for pace. But how do you see it as a guy who played a few years ago, you know, how India has metamorphosed, you know, has, you know, developed themselves into a team that can play pace, they can play spin, and even though New Zealand beat them at home, they look so at home at Perth, you know, that one of the fastest wickets in the world.
Well, Doc, you know, the Indian cricket players, many of them, or most of them, participate in their domestic cricket. So they're seeing a lot of red ball cricket on a regular basis. So it comes nothing strange to them. And I understand that they have quite a bunch of fast bowlers, guys who are bowling over 140 Ks on a consistent basis. So fast bowling right now is not a problem to India. What I find will be a problem to them is good quality spinners, because they've been focused so much on getting their batters accustomed to playing fast bowlers that I think that they've dropped off a bit in playing quality spinners. So it'll be interesting if Nathan Lyon get on a good dry pitch and start to test the Indians. Kohli is maybe the best player of spin that they've got, in my opinion. So if you can get Kohli out early, and then Lyon can, you know, keep probing at them on a very good length, and Lyon, as he always does, they can be in for a good fight, because, you know, the seamers like Cummins and Hazelwood, they're going to be keep coming at them. So India just can't drop their guards. They can't get overconfident. The Australians are going to come back very, very strong. So let's look and wait and see what's going to happen, because I believe that India may drop their guard because they won the first test.
Yeah, well, a fascinating series awaits, but we couldn't have this show without sponsorship. And of course, our sponsor is ESA Field White Rum, the best shot of the day. ESA Field White Rum. If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Yes, well, welcome again to Mason and Guest, and of course we do welcome your calls in a few minutes, 4341-790. And before we get on with things that are regional, Basil, what do you think about Bethel now, you know, starting a test career, playing in on a custom position at number three? Do you think this is something that you should do to a debutant, put him in such an important position, you know, in his first match away from home? Is this justice?
Firstly, pardon me for not saying good evening to my fellow panelists, and good evening to your listeners, and good evening to you, Doc. I think England is very high on Bethel. England feels that he has the requisite skills. They have the confidence. So I think that confidence in him would not make him feel like he's out on an island over there. I saw a quote from Ben Stokes, where he was saying, you know, because there's a lot of talk that here is a player that is making his test debut and is yet to score first class 100 and is averaging 25 in first class cricket. I mean, how could you put a guy with such credentials into a test team, much less batting him at number three? Well, Stokes said, we know what we're doing. We know what we're looking for. We know what we want. And Bethel ticks all those boxes. So now it's for Bethel to go out there, and to vindicate their confidence in him.
Well, it sounds incredibly West Indian when you look at those statistics and his history thus far, it seems, you know, so, well,
let's look actually, at the... actually, they said that Mike Gatton in 1978 did not make a first-class 100 when he made his debut in 1978. So we have a few precedences in terms of England.
So historically, it's not such an anomaly. You know, but looking at the 11 before we go on, you know, Crawley, Duckett, Bethel at number 3, Joe Root, Brooke, Ollie Pope, wicket-keeping, Ben Stokes, Wokes, Atkinson, Coarse, and Bashir. Not a lot of fast bowling there, George. Not out and out quicks. There's no Archer, you know, and some of the others are injured. You know, this English team, you know, is almost completely transformed.
Well, I think they're playing in New Zealand, right?
Yeah.
Out and out fast bowlers never really do well in New Zealand because the pitches are green. However, they're not fast for you to get all that bounce and pace. So they're looking at their guys to swing the ball and seam the ball around. And they've got guys in the team who are very good seamers and who will be able to give the New Zealand batsmen trouble. So I think these guys were playing horses for courses, courses for horses, stuff like that. So I think they have a good combination to play in New Zealand. That's the right attack. Because Archer is a guy who hits the deck real hard. And he wouldn't be that effective in terms of pace and bounce in New Zealand on those soft pitches. The pitches are green, however, it's not very hard all the way through. So I think it's a good side to me, in my opinion. Yeah. Good side.
Well, one of the things that we see looking at this England team, and even if we reflect on the Indian team with two injuries, on the while the Australian team is static, it seems like the real depth in world cricket seems to lie in India. Philo, what do you think about that? It seems like India can take four guys out and put four guys in and you know, just keep motoring on.
And give an IPL contract to a 13-year-old.
Yeah, I saw that. He looks like a pretty big 13-year-old.
They have a lot of cricketers. And if you eat roti, he will get big. He's strong. He's strong. He scored hundreds at 13 years old. He's strong. The Indians obviously have had it right. If they have the transformation and development of players right. They have a good junior program. They have good facilities, the HP, high performance centers in India are second to none. And when you look at it, a lot of their great players are involved as well at those HBCs and among those Ranji Trophy squads. And their players, as George said, their international players are mandated to play cricket in India. And a lot of their junior cricketers don't play a lot of white ball cricket. They only play white ball cricket at the under 19 level because of the ICC under 19 cricket. So they concentrate heavily on red ball cricket to develop those fundamental principles and skills. I think that is something that CWI needs to take out of the Indian leaf of the Indian book. How they get these young players to want to play the long format, even if it's two-day cricket, the long format to get them to hone their skills and then develop them as they come through the various age groups. So India, yes, have a lot of talent, and the talent is coming left, right, and center. You got to remember they won a test match against Australia the other day at Perth without Rohit Sharma and Shubman Gill. And there's no Mohammad Shami. He's now working his way back into fitness. You can imagine if Mohammad Shami was available, there'd be no Rennie. He'd be out of the team. There'd be no Hassan. There'd be a lot of players, but these guys have taken the opportunity and said, look, we're going to show the world that we can perform at this level. And if you look at the guy who batted at number 3, he looks mager, but he got good stamina and he can play. So he too will miss the second test match because obviously they have to make it. But the Indians have it all worked out. I think they have the proper systems and they have the proper people involved in their cricket development for their younger cricketers. And they can only go from strength to strength. And they're seeing the benefits too of rubbing shoulders with some of the best players in the world in the IPL, mind you, is T20. But the players are taking that knowledge from those experienced international players You could see it coming out with India, when they represent India. Okay. But India right now are on top of the world in a good space, and they can only go from strength to strength.
Okay, so before we go on, I got a message here saying to let you know, Philo, that the ground at Perth is a new ground, and they no longer play it at the Wacker. But, you know, I guess...
Yeah, I know, it's the Opus Stadium. Yeah, it's the Opus Stadium, yes, I know. But it's still quick. It's still quick.
But Miles, I'm still continuing your warm-up. So to that end, you know, I'd like to talk about the ability to develop players and to have depth in cricket, in the representative cricket. You've seen, you know, India has the basis via the IPL and the other structures to have, you know, basically they could have a whole, maybe two teams. Australia is stuck now with some aging guys. Khawaja's 38. Smith is in the high 30s, and you know the guys are aging. And then you know you look at England, who's trying to, you know, have different squads for different formats, and the team is constantly in flux with people in and people out. How do you look at this as far as West Indies cricket is concerned, and how can we get, you know, a broader base and really get that type of development that we're seeing with India?
It sounds like a warm-up question, but I feel like it's test match time.
Okay, so I came off that well, little walk in like Boomer, and then it you know suddenly the elbow went back. Yeah, and that was it.
I think it's as Philo said, it's ensuring that we have good foundations at the early levels. We've had a long standing on the 15 program. We have recently started to play the under 17, and we've introduced 2-day cricket at that under 17 level. We are trying to maintain long format cricket.
We love our sponsor. Keep going, Miles.
Yes, we're trying to maintain that long format cricket at under 19s, even though, you know, the under 19 World Cup is a 50 over tournament. So that way we try to ingrain the foundation, the basics, at those levels. Beyond that, definitely the professional system helps. Having players day in, day out working, you know, as professional cricketers. And now what we are trying to do is to bolster that with a solid 18 program and emerging tournaments to capture those players who would have come through under 19s, but may not have transitioned to senior cricket as yet. And we ensure that we get those players the opportunities to develop. You know, we've seen the academy and CCC in the regional tournaments, and that is part of the plan to ensure that we have players getting those opportunities. Previously, we would have seen young talented players that may have come into a West Indies team having played a few first-class games. And while that might still happen going forward, you look at the players who are in the academy now, a few of them would have played all of the first-class games in the last season. They will have the first-class games in this season. And if they progress to West Indies senior team in a couple of years' time, you know, by that time they would have maybe as many as 20 first-class matches under their belts as, you know, 24, 25-year-olds. So I think we are developing a framework that can sustain the players coming through. But of course, if we stumble upon a lot more resources, there are quite a lot more things that we can do to ensure that we keep that production line churning.
Okay, well, we have in the region, you know, the franchise system. We have CPL and 50 overs and other things. So cricket has been professionalized to some extent in the region. How do you know, let's say a player is on a contract for a franchise, how do you know that the professionalism that makes that player go out to work every day, even when there's no tournament or there's nothing happening, that they do their, well, maybe 40 hours a week or how much ever is required, you know, in training and in other things when there's nothing happening? Do you feel that enough is done when there's no cricket being played or a tournament or it isn't in the offing?
The short answer is no. I think that is one of the major deficiencies of our franchise system, that it is still very tournament-centric. So just prior to the tournament, things ramp up. You know, guys get excited about going into the tournament. And then after the tournament, things taper off. I mean, understandably, there would be rest and recovery required. But I think that the opportunity that we are missing so far, and it's one of the reasons why coming out of the franchise, the review of the franchise system that we have, you know, engage all of the head coaches, assistant coaches, SNCs and physios, is that period out of competition, there is so much to be gained. There's so much that could be gained in that time. So you recognize shortcomings of players in tournaments. You see where they are shown up, some of their deficiencies are shown up, and you catalog these during competition. And then post-competition, you have the opportunity to sit and review with the players the areas where they have fallen short and formulate a plan and a program to systematically work to improve on one or two, if not all of those areas, as you prepare to head into another tournament where you then, you know, assess and evaluate and then repeat that process. So I think that is one of the areas that we still have a lot of gains to make, and that we will be working with the coaches at the franchise level to ensure that, you know, we can capitalize on that opportunity.
Okay, so I think I have warmed you up enough that we can probably segue into the CG United Super 50. I think some people said it was anticlimactic. Many felt that a lot of good things had come out of the 50-over tournament. We saw Graves just come out with the three centuries and transition into a century in the test match, which shows that some of the quality that's there is reproducible and at a high standard. But, you know, explain to us what happened with, you know, the situation where we didn't have a champion, and tell us anything you want to about the tournament, and then I will open the floor to the panelists to continue the discussion.
Okay, so in headline terms, I think it was very obvious that there was torrential rainfall. I mean, the field was waterlogged for a significant period. But with that facility, you know, it was always known that once rain stopped, any water on the outfield would quickly disappear because the drainage there is quite good. The umpires at 5:45, well, at 5:42, they actually made it the determination that play could start by the cutoff time of 6:17, and a 20-over match could be played. And that was then communicated to the captains, along with the toss time at 6 p.m. And the match referee was in position for the toss, and neither captain was available to toss. And that is pretty much the facts of the situation.
Basil, I give you the chance to ask the first question there.
I wrote down a bunch of questions when I heard the director of cricket was coming on. Wow. And I don't try to get a chance to ask all of them. But on what he was speaking, what you, Mr. Director, you were talking about in terms of the territories and the players, because that's a pet peeve of mine, because I'm more familiar with Guyana. So I would see guys who are girls, women who play for West Indies, go back home with quote-unquote programs to develop skills and so on. And I've seen video of them doing some of these programs, and I have to scratch my head, because then you see, when you see the player back out into international or regional level, you're not seeing an improvement. So my question to you, do you guys have a system in which you will audit these coaches? Because I think that is a serious deficiency. And I'm talking this not from actually even seeing them per se much, but just looking at the results in terms of the expertise of our coaches in the territories. Is there a way in which you guys could audit and be able to upskill these coaches, so the players could really benefit?
Very good question. And the answer is that the process has started. We currently have engaged a coaching development consultant. He was in the region. He's a New Zealander. He was in the region up to a couple of weeks ago. At the start of November, he left. And so he would have met with all of our franchise coaches. He is working with them individually to try to ascertain which areas we can get the fastest gains. So that is one aspect that will be ongoing. In terms of monitoring of programs, I mean, this is an area that I think that we have also been deficient, where international players go back to the territory and in some cases do not get support. In other cases, they do not turn up for support. And one of the things that we are trying to do over the next few weeks is to formalize that process. I think we have it pretty well worked out on the medical front, where players may return with injury. There is a handover that goes to the physiotherapist on the ground, and then the physiotherapist is aware that this player has this particular injury. They need treatment, and then the physiotherapist on the ground will take over the treatment of that player and then send on a handover when that player moves from their program into another program. So we do have a template on the medical front that works quite well, and the intention is to try to get that done on the technical front, cricket wise, where our head coach would do a similar handover to the territorial coach, and that player would be asked to report to the franchise. And pretty soon, when we complete the recruitment process for our senior talent manager, then we would have someone whose job will be to ensure that that handover process takes place, and that there is accountability in the process and compliance on the part of the player. That is pretty much what we have planned to try to ensure that we use the opportunity when players are off tour to ensure that we get development and we get coaches to work on their areas of deficiencies.
Yeah, so it sounds like you had an inquisition lined up for Miles, but is there one other question of that large list of questions? Is there one that is really a burning question for you? You like to ask?
Yes, Mr. Director, I am a keen follower of women's cricket. having coached women's cricket here in the United States since 2008. So I follow women's cricket in the Caribbean. Anything that is streaming, I look at, as well as around the world. So that is something that's dear to my heart. I would like to know, again, in the territories is where, I know you would know this, the deficiency in terms of the women getting upskilled or even getting involved in cricket programs in the region. And how are you guys going to arrest that? And secondly, when I see the regional women's tournament, I see quite a few players who should not be playing at that level because their cricket experience is very limited. Is there a way in which to upgrade that level that you guys could bring in some overseas players? Not necessarily international, but overseas players that are more competent to each franchise, so it can help to lift the standards of this tournament. Because I think sometimes it's shameful. You see some women, they're not able to even feel a cricket ball properly or hold a bat well, and they're playing in a tournament which is one level below the international level.
Okay, so in terms of bringing in overseas players, that is not something that we have explored. I think that our fundamental challenge in the women's game, as you mentioned, is trying to build that pool of players. And we have to build the pool, because even if the overseas players come in and they are able to enhance the look of the product, then we still have to be selecting from players from our region to represent our West Indies team. So we have to try to build our pool of women's cricketers. So one of the things that we've done is that we have started a pathway program to encourage women cricketers coming into the game at earlier levels and being exposed to competitive cricket at earlier levels. Because I think that is one of the fundamental challenges that we have, why we end up with players at senior levels playing in our senior tournaments that don't seem to have the requisite foundation, which they should have gotten from playing competitive cricket at earlier levels. So we have started to build the foundation for our under-16 program. So currently, there is a grant program where CWI provides $20,000 to each territory to start at an under-16 level in their territory. Whether it at this point it may be as simple as some talent identification, trying to get players into structured programs where they can learn the basics. The plan is that by 2026, we would like to have an under-16 girls tournament, so that, again, you have young women playing the game at a competitive level at an earlier stage. And then when they advance through to under-19s, then the standard there would, you expect that you will have that knock-on effect where the standard at under-19s improve because the under-16s have had, you know, some experience playing competitive cricket. And then we have that further knock-on effect at the senior level where you have quite a number of players who would have now played, in some cases, extensively, because a very talented 14-year-old female player will likely make her under-19 territorial team. So you can find that a player coming out of under-19s would come out with 3 or 4 years experience at that under-19 level playing competitive cricket and of course be better served to play in the senior teams and the senior tournaments. Okay. What we have also done is to encourage, we have also started the process of having contracts for territorial women players, right? And the intention there, of course, is that eventually once we start to grow that pool of players, that similar to the way that we have professional men regional players, then we will also have professional senior female players as well.
So, Philo, how are you feeling about no champion for the CG United Super 50? I'd like to get back onto that topic.
Well, Doc, I feel numb because a group of cricketers left their territories and went to Trinidad and Tobago for 4 weeks with 10 kilograms. And they left last Sunday with 10 kilograms. They left with nothing. And Miles is talking quite nicely about women's cricket. I'm happy. I want Miles to let CW. I know they need to push the territory board to get directors of women's cricket. But Miles, my concern is the Super 50. I listened to your interview on Sports Max. I never thought that you were in Trinidad. From the way you spoke, I thought that, oh, this information is being fed to you back in Antigua, but you were actually there. But the amount of rain that fall on Saturday in Trinidad, Miles, as a former cricketer, do you really honestly believe, deep down in your heart, that cricket could have started at 6:15 after that volume of water? Does Barlar Stadium dry so quickly? And the amount of rain that they had during that Super 50 competition, do you honestly feel that those players could have gone up there and played that final? And my second question, your regulations did not allow for a reserve day. You said on Sports Max that the rules of cricket stood, but you didn't come down to other alternatives to determine a winner, like run rate, score the hooky who had in the preliminaries, and that kind of thing. Were those ever considered to be in your playing conditions, or is this an oversight on CWI? And did the players themselves took safety a lot more serious than the umpires and the match referee? And what inspections were done? Because I was told that the southern end of Barlar Stadium, the ground, was very wet. And the ground staff used a lot of drain agent, but there was no second inspection. Please clarify these things to me.
You're muted, Miles.
Sorry, I was trying to take some notes so that I don't lose track of.
You were ruminating on the questions.
Well, there's a lot to take. Sorry about that.
Okay, so I'll start with the conditions at Brian Lara. Well, you asked me if I thought that cricket, if I thought the conditions were good enough for cricket to play. The answer to that is it really doesn't matter what I thought. Because the laws of the game are clear that the umpires are the sole arbiters on anything related to the conditions of the outfield, pitch, or light, right? And in their estimation, the conditions at the time that they alerted the captains to the start time for the game, the conditions had improved sufficiently that they were not dangerous or unsafe to play. Right? Now, you mentioned that the tournament was rain affected. So all throughout the tournament, umpires had to make calls about conditions. So matches were abandoned. Matches had delayed starts when the umpires deemed that the conditions were unfit to start on time. And this was a case where, despite the volume of rain, I mean, Barlar is a sand-based field, and 1 minute there were puddles on the field, the rain stopped, and half an hour later, all of that water was gone from the surface of the field. So the match officials, who are the ones with the authority to determine whether or not the conditions were good, and had done it for all the matches prior, decided that the conditions were good enough for the start. And that was good enough for me. And based on the laws of the game, it should have been good enough for the teams.
Yeah, but as we're looking at health and safety for players, if a player gets injured, you know what the cost will be in relation to medical. And the captains made a decision based on the players. And then the players sat for 5 hours Then there's something, you have to warm up, get yourself all tuned to play a final. Who wants to play a final, Miles, in adverse conditions? Not perfect for a final. Who wants to play a cricket? A 50-over game, you bring it to 20-over match to determine a final in a Super 50. You want perfect conditions. I know it is an act of God, but I think that your rules shall allow a bit more flexibility going forward. You're playing in Trinidad. You know the climate change is all around the world. Mm-hmm. And that is something that CWI needs to sit down and work out properly so that this will not happen again. No champion for the Super 50. What is going to happen now to Barbados franchise and Jamaica franchise in relation to funds? Because you said on Sports Max that the 25,000 at the semifinals goes to the losers, which I find strange. I wonder if that's an error, because you can't pay a team $25,000 to get a beat. And the team that goes to finals only waiting out to collect 100 if they win, or 50,000 if they come second. So what are they going to, what numerations are they going to get? Saying that there's no result.
Well, I'll start back with the assertion that the conditions were unsafe. I mean, the laws of the game are set so that the umpires are the ones making the judgment, considering all the stakeholders, right? And of course, the burden that they have to meet, what they have to satisfy themselves that the conditions are not dangerous or unsafe. And the fact that the umpires gave a start time means that they came to the position that the conditions were safe. Now, how does someone outside of that group, on what basis can they determine that the conditions were not safe, right? The volume of rain is I don't know that you can use the volume of rain that fell, because the conditions has to do with the outfield conditions and the conditions at the pitch, right? And the umpires are the ones who have the authority to determine whether or not those conditions are fit for play, and they made that determination.
Yeah, but Mars, okay. You told me that already. I want to know about remuneration for the two franchises that went to a finals and got nothing. They won the semifinal games, but you said at Sports Max at the semifinals the losers get the 25,000. What do these two franchises get in reaching the finals? What remuneration are they going to receive? They left Jamaica and Barbados with 10 kilograms, and they returned to Barbados and Jamaica with 10 kilograms for 4 weeks of hard work. It's only match fees that they got, if they were Man of the Match awards, whoever collected those of school. But you said in your interview at Sports Match that the $25,000 for the semifinalists go to the losers.
Be succinct. Yes.
So, fellow, it's what I was explaining on Sports Max was basically the framework for payment for the payout of prize monies. So the framework that exists is that the losing semifinalists gets $25,000 each. The team that is first place gets $100,000, and the team that is second place gets $50,000. So when there is a final to be played to determine the team that is first and the team that is second, and the teams that are supposed to contest that final refuse to play, well, let's say that they did not turn up at the toss, and as a result, the game could not have been played, then how do you distribute prize monies in that? If the game was abandoned based on the playing condition, there was a framework for the payout of prize monies.
Yeah,
right? If the game had come to a
Phil, I know end, you need there, to interject. But yes, well, we get the point that the game wasn't finished, and you're in essence saying that since the game wasn't finished and no winner and second place person was determined, then there's no money to be given to those people. But we must also remember that ESA Fields, just a minute. We want to go to a break, and then I will come back. But I want to be succinct at this about this issue, and to make our points, and to, you know, give us a chance to really ventilate it properly when the time comes. So, and I'll give George a chance when we come back. So remember that ESA Fuel, White Rum, the best shot of the day, they're our sponsors. ESA Fuel, White Rum. If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it up, or you can't qualify to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ESA is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 pa 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 da da. Say what you want. ESA is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day. George, I know you're fast, so I'll give you a chance to weigh in on the Super 50.
Hey, Miles. Good evening, sir. So we had that issue. What plans do you have in place so that we won't have this happen again? Are you guys going to get all the first-class grounds equipped with enough covers that the entire surfaces can be covered so we don't lose any finals or any cricket matches of any significance?
Well, based on what transpired on Saturday, the volume of rain that came, the fact that play was able to be called at 6:17 is a testament to the quality of the surface at the Brian Lara Cricket Academy, right? The outfield drained thoroughly, the covers that covered the pitch were adequate. There was one area of concern at the edge of the square that the umpires spoke to the ground staff about getting ready, and you know they took some time, but they were able to get it up to a satisfactory level that the umpires felt that it was safe enough. Right now, in terms of a reserve day, which is something that a lot of persons have proposed as being a solution for a situation like this. The reality of the game is that the umpires would have had to go through the same process, right? It was not a case where at 12 o'clock when they saw the rain, they could say, okay, no, we'll come back, we'll try again tomorrow, right? They have to go through the process, because if there is enough time in the game to allow for the minimum of 20 overs per side to play, then the game has to play, right? Okay. Which was the case in this game.
Okay.
And then, of course, a reserve day doesn't guarantee that you, you know, don't get the same weather the next day, etc.
Okay.
Along with the additional cost that comes with.
Right. So remember, building that in. 4341790 is the number we'd like you to call, because we'd like to talk about Super 50 and also the West Indian win. But I'd like to say that this is a very unsatisfactory situation. You go to all the trouble of having a tournament. You are administrators. You are there to facilitate the players and the development of the game. It seems like, you know, really an exercise in frustration to have a tournament and not have a winner. I think that if you have two captains and you have 22 players from two different countries, different socioeconomic groups, there's a message that the captains are giving you. And I think that you have to look at the message, look at what 22 people are saying to you, and consider if, as administrators, you're doing the best for the game by not having a result. Do we have any callers on the line? Hi, you're on Mason and Guest.
Hi, good evening.
Yes, sir.
Good evening, sir, and good evening to your panel. I'm here listening to this conversation. I mean, when I heard the result of the 50 over tournament being relayed on this about the findings by one of our sports commentators here in Barbados on Saturday, I was stunned. I was befuddled and bemused about the situation, to hear that you can have two teams at the top, according to them, forfeit the game, and the two teams who lost in the semifinals, automatically based on what the directors there saying, that they will be getting their pay, and the two persons who come one and two are at the top of the table getting nothing at this point in time. Now, to my mind, there's something not going on quite right with this situation. And I think there are two attorneys at law, one in Barbados and another one. I think the team should seek their call in this matter and make sure that they are being, that this country is being compensated. For Barbados, I would hope that my prime minister will get involved with this aspect of it, because the Barbadian team has to be paid for their participation towards the finals. And there was no way, based on those conditions, that no cricket could have been played. And it is really mind-boggling that such a final did not have a reserve there, on the basis that this is the hurricane season. And tons of rain have been falling in Trinidad. Tons of rain. There was no way that could have been fit. Also, I don't want to preempt what you are doing there, Dr. Ford, but there's another incident that I heard on the Fox News this evening, and it is really mind-boggling that a person could demit a position after 3 months. I don't know if that is on your chart. I'm not saying what, but that was in the Fox News, and that's mind-boggling. It seemed that Cricket West Indies seemed to be in real difficulty in administering cricket in this country. In the Caribbean.
Okay.
These things should not happen. I would hope that means next year, if there's no win in this, the prize money has to go to, for the first place, $200,000, and the second place to $100,000. That's the only way. But I'm only saying that if there's no winner, if we go to the law court. But this must be decided in the law court. Hmm. Barbados must be and should be paid for their participation or intended participation in the finals. And this is my contribution to that scenario this afternoon.
Thank you and have a good evening. Well, you know, it's starting to sound as though there'll be some punitive actions. I mean, teams not being paid. I mean, is it a case that we'll be having some sanctions on the players? We have another caller. Welcome to Mason and Guest. Don't listen to your radio, just talk to us. Well, seems that that individual got cold feet. But yes, we did say that someone has emitted office after 3 months. I think there's precedent for this in the private sector, which is rather unfortunate. But I'm not sure if Miles, as director of cricket, will want to comment on that. But Miles, is there going to be some sanction for the captains not being able to make their meeting with the umpires and the match being concluded? What are the plans? What are the procedures that we should expect for such an occurrence?
Okay. Charges have been raised by the match referee in accordance with the code of conduct. Obviously, you have a case where you have a time for the toss and the captains have refused to come for the toss. So that is definitely within the remit of the match referee to raise those charges. So those will be laid against the respective captains. They will have the choice of accepting the charges and the penalties proposed, or accepting the charge and disputing the penalties, or disputing both charges and penalties, in which case the matter would go to the disciplinary
arbitration. Well, it seems like they've already lost winnings, and I guess the only thing they could lose next will be match fees. Do we have a caller? No. Yes, welcome to Mason and Guest. Caller, are you listening to your radio, or are you listening to us? While you ponder on that question, Miles, are we really? Wasn't there some other way of really determining, or a better outcome for this situation? Do you feel that this is in the best interest of West Indian cricket, that, you know, you have a tournament, two captains don't come to meet with the umpires, and this decision is made? Were there any discussions? Was anything done to determine what the issues were? Is it that they were indisposed? Is it that they were elsewhere? Were they informed the time? Did they have problems with warming up? What do you think is your understanding of the issues with the two captains? Because it's kind of odd that there will be, you know, there will be resonance with the two captains.
Well, I would prefer not to speculate on what might have happened, may or may not have happened.
We just want the facts.
In the back room.
We just want the facts, not speculation.
I don't know what the discussions were between the captains. What I do know is that the match referee and the umpires gave the captains a time to start and a time to toss, which was within the time frame allowed before the cutoff period, right? And one of the things that I would like to clarify, I mean, it is coming across somewhat as though, you know, Cricket West Indies has decided that this is how the tournament would end without a champion. Mm-hmm. But what has happened is that we created all the conditions for a game to play. The weather intervened. The personnel who were in charge of determining whether the conditions were fit for play made that determination, provided a time for the players and the teams to start to play the game to determine who would be first place and second place in the tournament, right? And it is the teams that refuse to participate in the final by not coming out to take the toss, right? Okay. So,
but the thing is, if teams everything decide,
that was done,
if teams decide not to participate henceforth in any Cricket West Indies endeavor, would there be a game to administrate? Would it be cricket? You know. So the thing is that the players, everybody comes to see the players. Yes, I was a former fledgling and insignificant administrator, but the thing is, the players are so important that, you know, we have that's what the people really come to see. And I get the point that you're making regarding having the rules and being informed and nothing transpiring and therefore coming to the conclusion. But I believe that you know, there should have been a way of really, you know, coming out with a better result, even if it meant if it meant spending a bit more revenue to get closure after such a good tournament. I think it kind of diminishes what has happened over the preceding weeks for the tournament. But, you know, there was a test match today, and, you know, it would be remiss of me not to go into that. The West Indies won, which is something that we always clamor for. And, you know, we beat Bangladesh by 201 runs in Antigua. Put up a mammoth score in the first innings, 490, and you know, Graves made 115, and we had two large half centuries by Louis and Athanase, and then our bowlers took over. I know before the last match we discussed whether Roach would be in the team, and we, you know, I must admit that I had decided that maybe I would go with the faster guys because I didn't envisage a spinner not playing, and I have to accept that I was wrong there. But George, you know, the West Indian fast bowlers came through. We got the result. What do you think about the performance?
Well, I must say congratulations to the boys for a very dominant victory against the Bangladesh team. They just came from Pakistan real high in confidence, and probably they thought they're going to beat us. Our bowlers were very consistent and disciplined throughout the match with good line and length. Al-Zahri scared the pants out of these guys. He beat them into submission, both innings. That reminded me of 1976 or so when India played West Indies in Sabina. So Bedi called these guys in when nine men were out. It happened both innings because in the first innings, Taskin didn't want anything to do with Al-Zahri because he got sconed. Then the second innings, the guy got a bit of a beating from Al-Zahri again and decided, hey, I don't want any more of this. So I must say that they were beaten into submission. The batters were in the first innings batted with patience, good skills, and good batsmanship. You see, they were rotating the strikes very often. I must say big congratulations to Justin Graves on his maiden century. He batted brilliantly, and he has shown that this guy, he has matured into a top-tier test player. I know some people may say I'm talking too soon, but I've been watching this guy for the past couple of seasons, and he's really showed good character, good batsmanship. And even with his bowling, he bowled brilliantly. He was seaming the ball around. Congratulations to Louis and Athanase as well for getting in the 90s, but they threw it away. They gifted their wickets away. And, you know, when you have a team down, when you're batting, you got to fill your boots, because there are going to be times when you get a good Jaffa and you get a first baller. So you got to take advantage of these situations when you're on top. Kemar Roach batted brilliantly as well. He helped to Graves,
yeah,
to build his innings and get his century. All in all, it was a very satisfactory victory from all guys. And I'm hoping that when we go to Sabina, that we give them a baptism of fire. We need fast, green, top, so Alzari and his guys can run through and destroy Bangladesh again. Because when you go to Chittagong and these places, you're getting square turners from day one. So we're at home. We know that they don't like pace. So we should give our guys the advantage in putting some good, fiery pace, scare them to death, get them out of the place, and let us win the series 2-0.
Well, I'm sure you don't literally mean death, but Philo, I heard...
Oh, no, no, Roach. No, not death at all. No.
Yeah, Roach said there was a kind of a pitch crisis, and you know, you watched the match. But what are your views on what you saw?
I just want to ask Miles, what is Weepu's position on this the outcome of the Super 50? He will answer that when he gets his turn to speak. I would just like to congratulate our West Indies cricket team for beating Bangladesh convincingly. I want to congratulate Justin Graves. Consistency, and obviously his fitness level has to be very, very high.
Are you
held? Scored three big centuries in the Super 50, and then move on to the test match and score another 100 not out. And he batted wonderfully well. Not a lot of boundaries, but a lot of ones and twos. And obviously Kemar Roach added the support. Mikel Louis and Antonez, obviously they go to Jamaica. Hopefully they will get 100. But I thought that the victory was good. I like the aggression by the bowlers. Obviously. A lot of people debated Kemar Roach. I wouldn't debate Kemar Roach. Roach is an asset. He's a smart cricketer now. He knows his way and he knows what to do. And I think that the five bowlers bowled well. Justin came in and showed that you can swing the ball. Justin, to me, did what a guy like Kyle Mears would have been doing in West Indies cricket, swinging the ball and batting in the middle and getting runs. But he showed that he bowled well. He's a good catcher as well. So he gives that extra life to the team. Obviously, when you look at it, Captain Prafit continues to struggle. Vice-Captain De Silva continues to struggle with the bat. And these will be some problems going into Jamaica for the head coach, Coley, and his other assistants, coaches, to work on. But you can look and see that, obviously, the guys were enjoying themselves. When you listen to the noise coming through the stump mics, there's a lot of banter out there, a lot of encouragement. And I'm happy to see Alzari, if somebody drops a catch, he smiles and goes back to the end. His bowling marker running a bowl again, and that is very good to see. And I just hope he continues to lead the way in our fast bowling department. I think that once he is managed and handled correctly, he's going to inspire a lot more young fast bowlers to come and play red ball cricket and be successful. So well done to them, and I wish them all the best up at Sabina Park. And I hope that the curators at Sabina Park can get the pitch nice and glassy and hard and get our fast bowlers again to express themselves. And I keep saying, Doc, fast bowling is it? A lot of batters can bat fast bowling, but they don't like it.
Yeah, Basil, your turn.
Kudos to the West Indies. That's the result I expected. Just to correct George, Bangladesh were on a high after they beat Pakistan in Pakistan, but then they got their head handed to them two consecutive series in India and at home before they came by South Africa. So they came to the West Indies with a tail between their legs. Plus, on top of that, They lost probably their best batter in the series against South Africa, Musti Pickard, the former wicketkeeper. So he wasn't able to come. I thought Bangladesh had a bowling attack that could compete with us, but I always thought their batters, when they come to the pace, they're going to struggle mightily against us. And the expectations, as I thought, came about. I would say they surrendered. That's what happened like in 1976. They surrendered. Islam today after he got the hit, he decided to walk off and didn't want to have any more of it. You know, so it brought back memories to Michael Holden and company in Jamaica in 1976. And I hope Sabina Park, they don't have them flat tracks like I saw during the four-day tournament, that we get some nice pacey tracks that we could clean up Bangladesh and get finish on a nice high with the test championship, sending Bangladesh home down 2-0. And kudos to Young Graves, Louis, and Athanase. And I hope that Louis and Athanase will learn from this test match. They will take the pain of getting out in the 90s and make sure they get the job done the next time.
Well, Miles, we were talking about another topic, but I'm sure that now let's talk about something a bit more pleasant. That's the win by the West Indies today. As director of cricket, how do you feel about that?
I'm elated, man. I mean, it's always good to see, especially when, you plan and things come together well. I think probably the most heartening thing for me, apart from Justin Graves' continuation of form coming off of what he had done in the Super 50, is the way that the fast bowlers shared the wickets and you know, they competed every opportunity that they got to bowl. They were eager, they were hungry, and you know, it bodes well. We know that generally the best teams in the world are the teams that have the best fast bowling attack. We have Kimar Roach, who is very experienced and seasoned. And then we have a group of young fast bowlers who seem to be getting a good understanding of their craft. I mean, we've seen the growth in Jaden Seals over the last couple of series. We are seeing Shamar Joseph being able to continue to pick up wickets. So, you know, those things are apart from the win. You know, those things are what really make me feel happy about the performances that I saw over the last few days.
Okay, I think we have a caller, because remember, we want you to call 434-1790. West Indies have won, so it's we'd like to hear from our listeners, you know, about the pleasure of that result. Can we take a call? Yes, caller, you're on Mason and Guess.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Hi. I'm just wondering. Okay, I hear about good performances, the guys and everything. That's all well and good. Isn't this the same performance, but just played against a weaker team? I mean, if this was Australia, we wouldn't be talking this same. It wouldn't be the same conversation.
Well, we just won a test match in Australia on our last tour, but I do take the point that Bangladesh is a weaker team, and you know, cricket's played on the field and you just have to beat who's there. But I think your point is that the West Indian team has to try to go up the ranks and be more competitive. How do you think we can do that, caller?
Well, I'm not really a big cricket fan, but it's just that I do like listening to it, and I also, you know what I mean, I'm glad that we won the game and so on, but the match. But, you know, you hear that, okay, this person bowled really well, this is a good decision, you know what I mean, these kind of things. But if it was another team and the guys probably performed the same way that they performed when they won against a harder team, you'd be hearing, like, you know, this body should not have done this.
Yes,
this was a bad decision to be made. And
Yes, the negativity would flow. I get the point. But I'm glad that you called and that you're still happy we won. So can we take care of yourself? Can we take another call, Ken? Yes, welcome to Mason and Guest.
Good night, sir.
Good night.
Good night. I don't know this talk about assault, but we beat Bangladesh. We should have beat it yesterday. I'm sorry I beat it yesterday. It's quite rare in the fall of the day. I'm glad we beat them. And yeah. Can't be spare team for me. So we got to beat the club that beat me. We can say, no, who beat me? Beat them back and send them back home. This is what we should do with them. Maybe, but beat them up. That last time, gentlemen, we beat Australia.
Yes, I reminded him. But you're saying we should be as efficient, we should be lethal and efficient and ruthless. That's what you're saying.
I have
when no we're on top.
Every player had to send a team from school to me because they sort of got it. Every school team beat me to come back. Beat them, bad and send them back home. And I played with the men, but only thing I'm sorry that Joseph didn't get them. Therefore, can't drive us. We beat the yes, and then let it get a rest
there. Yeah, it's a good point. Thank you, caller, and keep listening. It's a good point. I mean, we had so many drop catches. There must have been at least six that I saw. You know, Basil, what do you think? Why are we dropping so many catches? And we seem to be dropping them off of your compatriot.
Our fielding coach is not on duty. He is elsewhere. So he's in Guyana.
Oh, I see.
Kudos to him. It shows how much his absence is. I'm just joking. Guys got to be better at catching. At this level, you got to take those catches. You know, there's no excuse. You know, they just got to be better. Simple as that. Mm-hmm. And you know, George is a former fast bowler would know, you running in them, you putting in all that effort for guys to drop your catches, you got to support the bowlers better than that. And I felt for young Joseph, man, back to back. I mean, oh gosh, he must have said, I got to bowl these guys out. Don't worry, nobody catch. I got to bowl them out.
Okay, well, you know, we the callers have said some interesting things there. Let's hear from another caller. Mason and Guest.
Good night, Mr. Forday. Your company.
Thank you. Good night.
Yeah, you're doing a wonderful job. So I think Andrew will take a back seat right now.
Well, he will be missing next week as well.
So well, that's good.
I hope that will suffice.
Okay. That's good. My concern is about brass rate.
Mm-hmm.
And the silver.
Yes.
They're the two local.
Our two most experienced. Not most experienced because Roach is experienced, but two of the more experienced players. Tell us what you're concerned about with Brathwaite. What did you see
that worries you? Brathwaite can't handle the moving ball.
Yes, I'm not a batting coach. I mean, I'm just a cricket fan. But he does have the tendency, that back foot tends to flare out as though he doesn't think the ball is going to hit the bat. And there's an uncertainty when he plays a defensive stroke that isn't really, doesn't inspire me with confidence. And I think defense should be sung, but also the ability to score runs. And in that innings, he had an innings of 4 runs from 38 balls. And
which is
less than adequate. And
but Brathwaite was batting so far away. Where is the coach? You mean the coach? I'm not a coach, and I can see his downfall. What's the coach doing?
Well, Brathwaite's played matches at every level, and he's played so many matches over a period of time. And, you know, the silver made a cut shot there, knowing that the guy was there. It just didn't really make sense. But you do have a point. I too am concerned about the form of the captain and his confidence. And, you know, I think if you find a way to score runs and turn over the strike, you'd feel a lot better. But watching him in defense is my main concern.
Right.
And I don't know if Philo is a former batsman. Philo, do you feel that angst when you watch
before you talk to Philo, can I ask for a question?
Sure. Is it a medical question? Oh,
what shirt is Kevin wearing tonight? I would have done that already.
What shirt is he wearing? It's a multicolored black and tan shirt, but kind of like a calypso type thing. But it looks like it's brand name. It's, you know, polyester, a little bit of spandex. It's not a cheap shirt for sure.
He don't wear another cheap, but I would have known that.
He's well remunerated by VOB, and you know, he's a top
$1,000 a night.
Yes, and deserves more. Deserves more.
Okay.
Yes.
So that's all. Say hello to Philo for me.
Yes, he takes your regards. Thank you. Thank
hello.
You.
Hello.
Have a good night.
Yes.
So hello. Why is everybody shouting Philo? No, you realize that everybody's always calling after Philo?
Yeah. Philo is love.
Nice name.
In the country.
Nice name.
Definitely.
Doc, I take that credit. Good night, Ken. Good night to you. I thought you were wearing a Christmas shirt. Say that. It's that time of the year.
I lent it to
Craig Bradford is batting for survival. Okay. Craig Bradford is batting for survival, Doc. And as an opening batter, you're batting for survival, you're in trouble. Miles can tell you. We open batting. Craig, last decent score was in England at Nottinghamshire. Really showed some aggression. And I think that he needs to get back to that mode. He's played close to 100 test matches now. I think he's just 5 away or something like that from 100 test matches. But he's not stranger to this kind of pressure. But the drought is going on too long. There are floods in Trinidad and Barbados, and Craig Bradford should not be in a run drought for so long. He should be able to come out of it. He has to flow. He has to go up in the nets in Jamaica, and he has to spend extra time practicing hitting the ball, pushing the ball away, rotating the strike, and get a momentum. He doesn't have any momentum. And that right foot coming around like he's square dancing is because he has no confidence. Mm-hmm. He's looking to hope to feel the ball on the back rather than hit the ball on the back. And that is a problem. Johnson De Silva puts his left foot in front of the stumps and plays around his left pad. And the bowler's now bowling the ball at the pad. Mm-hmm. So once he misses the ball, he's going to be LBW. And he stays back a lot looking for short balls. And he's not a good puller. So these are fundamental problems that he has. And you see that he drops a few catches as well,
yes,
which is dangerous for a wicketkeeper batter.
Yes,
because if a wicketkeeper batter is catching the ball nicely, that means his hand and eye coordination and feet are going. When he goes to bat, it's just an extension of hand, eye coordination and feet. But there's a problem. We have James Adams, who's a former wicketkeeper, who's a batting coach. He's capable enough to do it. But are the players receptive to what he's trying to get them to do? I don't know. I don't see no nets. But
point.
I hope that they go to Jamaica.
Good point.
Particularly Philo. Craig and Joshua, and work on those fundamental principles.
Okay, so we have another caller. Good night. Welcome to Mason and Guest.
Good night, gentlemen.
Good night.
I'll be listening to the critics of Bradford there. I think Bradford's problem when he was young, his flaws. He batted well to his flaws. He made a lot of runs. He's having problems now because I think the coaches are trying to change those flaws. And you know, like Sir Viv, he had his flaws and they tell him you have to change and you have to change. If he had changed, he wouldn't be Viv because he used to hit through mid-wicket from the offside and he perfected that. Bradford perfected with his flaws. He's now trying to change those flaws, and he must struggle. That's what he's doing. If he had gone back to doing what he was doing, the unorthodox style, the lower back, short, right-hand grip, hitting across, he would have been very well because he perfected that.
Okay.
He's now changing that style because the coaches are probably telling him to change. You have to do this, you have to do that.
Well, I don't think that a player of his stature and experience would. I think he'd measure everything that he's told and come up with a solution himself. But the thing is, if you look at all the batsmen, let's say from a Sarwan all the way down, they all start with a pretty good average and the average plummets. But of course, ESA Field White Rum, the best shot of the day, as our sponsor, we want to give them their due. ESA Field White Rum.
If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it up, or you can't qualify to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ESA is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 pa 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 da da. Say what you want. ESA is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day.
Okay, not to be negative, but we did have a manager match. Justin Graves, we know Jason Holder is one of our icons, a former number one all-rounder in the world. We've seen Graves in Australia. He moves the ball off the seam in. He moves it out. He bowls at a similar pace. And I guess the real challenge was the batting. And we've seen just one score of significance now in this test match. You know, George, what do you think is the possibility of having a Graves and a Holder in the same team? Are we going to have a very useful and pleasurable decision to make going forward? Or do you see that they can be compatible considering we have the two Josephs, Roach is still there, and, you know, we have Seals?
For Jason to get back in the team, I don't know, but just looking at this realistically, I think Jason has more time to go than Kemar Roach. As I've said, I love Kemar, and I think he should be there as a mentor with the team, right? I believe that Jason can come in and fit in that role because he bowls excellently at test match level, and his batting is very good. So I don't think we've seen the end of Jason Holder. I really don't think so. They both can play because the more batters we have, the better it is. How old is Jason? About 32?
Well, I'll have to check.
Miles, you know? Yeah. I believe Kemar may be couple of years older than him. So I believe that if anything, if we're not going to play a spinner, we'll play both of them. We need some strength in our batting, and I think Jason can add a bit more to that in terms of strength.
Basil, what do you think? Is this a difficult decision, Jason versus Graves?
Yeah, I don't think both of them will play in the same 11. if Graves continues to play like he does, it's going to be very hard for Walter to get into the side. Because he has come into the side and taken his spot, the role he was playing in the team. And if he plays like this, Holder got to be outside looking in, as far as I'm concerned.
Jason is 33. Philo, I'll give you a chance. What do you think? Equal opportunity, but looking at the two all-rounders, even though it's an early time for Graves, I know Graves is probably about maybe approaching 30 by now, but what do you think of that decision there?
Well, there's only one person who can make that decision is the head coach from the new selection policy at CWI, which I think is flawed. If it was me, it comes down to where the cricket is being played. If you're playing at a place like Sabina Park, you know, the test matches are only two now. Jason Holder at Sabina Park, you could consider him, but who would you leave out? Are you going to leave out a Kemar Roach, who has just demonstrated that he can hold a bat and been a valuable innings in the bottom? So it is going to be difficult because Justin Grace has come in and he's done what obviously head coach Kohli would have picked him to do, and that is perform, score hundreds and take wickets and catches. Jason, obviously, we know his record, but he hasn't been playing a lot of red ball cricket. I believe that if he wants to reassure himself, he has to play in the four-day competition, which I think starts in January, the first class season, and he has to perform. And if he doesn't perform, then he's going to continue to look outside of that red ball and maybe get him into the white ball. But when you look at Graves and the way that he's going, it'd be hard to see what has happened to him in Australia when he didn't go to England. It's hard to see that happening again. I think he showed that he has the class and the temperament for test match cricket, and he's fitted in. His fifth bowling is something to admire. He swings the ball. He gets the ball to seam about in the region, which is very good. And he's fit. So I think that Jason will have to come good in four-day cricket and convince Kohli and the scouts at Mars Bascom keep talking about, but we don't know who they are, that he wants to play red ball cricket for West Indies again.
Yeah, I've heard you say that
no,
before.
No, I'm serious. I don't but know who the scouts are. I know. I come in home in January. I come in home in January.
You want to
and
meet
I would
them?
Like to know who the scouts are, so I can have a chat with them.
Okay.
I would like to.
Well, I'm sure you'll be like facilitated. But getting back to your to the discussion, it's fascinating because they're two of the better slip catchers, and we saw the difficulties we had with slip catching in the match. The two of them are bowlers of the same pace that. You know, they bowl differently, but of the same pace, and it comes down really to batting. But is it that maybe Graves bowling as the fifth bowler, as you say, and Jason bowling as the opener or the first change, you know, that does that tip the balance? But it will be a fascinating thing going forward. But I just want to look at Casey Carty for a short while. Seemed to have hard hands, and, you know, he got caught at a mid wicket, and then he went at the ball hard and got caught. Is there something wrong with the way he's going about his batting? And Hodge looked good, got run out. What do you think about how that went? Okay, it seems like I'm alone for a while, but I will say that
recording in progress.
Yes. Okay. So we've got the guys back. So
you're muted, Doc.
Yeah. Yeah, we had a short outage there. I think this shirt is wreaking more havoc in the studio than we'd anticipated. So I mean, we'd have to caution our operator not to wear such a shirt next. But are you hearing me now? Yes, good. So right, so what about our other two youngsters, Casey Carty and Kavim Hodge, just for a few minutes? About 2 or 3 minutes. I think I want to hear George on this one.
Well, Casey Carty looks to be a very promising player, but he's got to cut that shot out because in the ODIs and so on, he'll get away with it because you don't have the second and third slip. But he's playing that shot and he's just playing it just like you're playing catch in practice. If you're going to play a shot like that, you got to go all the way that it flies over the slip. Because these guys, they've seen that he likes that shot, and he's going to be a victim of that if he continues. What he'll have to do now is learn to shoulder arms, let it go through, and just wait for the right balls to play in the V. He's a good player, and let's give him a chance. Just the first test. Hopefully, second test, he'll correct that mistake. The coach can talk to him and let him know that he doesn't have to play that shot all the time. He's very successful at it in ODIs, but in Test cricket, he won't be because you have the slip cordon waiting for that catch. Okay. In terms of Hodge looks a good player. He was unfortunately run out in the first innings. He's a compact player, patient, has good skills. We've got two good promising players for the future. So I don't have any problem with these two guys. I think they have places to go in West Indies cricket.
Okay, very positive. I think we kind of truncated a question that Philo had asked on the previous topic. Miles Philo wanted to know if there was any feedback from Weeper that you can be make us privy to regarding the CG Super 50.
We met with Weeper. It was pretty much an exercise in ascertaining facts. So there wasn't any stone position that was put forward by either side of the meeting. So they, of course, I'm sure will be having the discussions with their members. And, you know, as things progress, I'm sure that we will meet a few more times before we get to the resolution of this matter.
And George?
On another topic, I just wanted to get Mr. Bascom before he goes. Are you guys considering opening a fast bowling academy all year round so that we can have more fast bowlers coming up in the pipeline? Fast bowlers are what are going to win us the matches. We have lots of good greats, you know, from former greats, good former fast bowlers in the region. And what we can do, we can have, you know, some of the elite coaches from overseas help teach these guys how to relate to the players, how to teach. Because sometimes we may be good former players, but we may not be good at teaching how we used to play. All right. So have you guys considered having an all year round fast bowling academy?
Be succinct.
Yes, we haven't considered an all year round academy, but what we have considered is ensuring that we have support for the fast bowlers all year round. So ideally what we would like to have is as close to someone who is as close as possible to full time as a fast bowling coach. We have already engaged
10 seconds for you, Miles. Ten seconds on a
player mentor type contract, because he definitely leads, and you can see that, you know, he leads the pack as a fast bowler, and he has a lot that he can convey to our players.
Okay, just a public announcement before we go. Levy settled the score, Independence Day cricket match on Saturday, November 30th. This year, of course, at 1 p.m. 20-over match at Gull Hill St. John. The Elvis Howard Family Ties 11 against St. John Cultural. And, of course, there'll be music and drinks on sale. But, gentlemen, we've had a really good show. We've gone far and wide, and we've come back home. We looked at Australia versus India. We looked at Jason Bethel. We've also looked at the Test match, the Super 50, and I'd really like to thank Mr. Butcher and George and Philo and Miles Bascom for being here. I think we ventilated a lot of topics, and I look forward to seeing all of you and also our callers and listeners. We had a wonderful show. Thanks, everyone. Mason and guests signing off.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Levere, for Leroy, I beg your pardon, for a really good management team. management, okay. So we finally got rid of Andrew.
Temporarily.
Okay, we go into the top of the hour. Good evening, everybody.